Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, the Pandavas retire timely, between text 43 and 44. I'll mostly speak about text 44, so I'll just read through 43. Jirabhasana raharo bhadhavan mukhin murdhaja darshayan latano rupam jidon matta pishachava anaviksham mano niragad ashrindan bhadhiro yata. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. After that, Maharaj Yudhisthira dressed himself in torn clothing, gave up eating all solid foods, voluntarily became dumb, and let his hair hang loose. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything, and just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. Report. Thus being freed from all external affairs, he had nothing to do with imperial life or family prestige. And for all practical purposes, he posed himself exactly like an inert, mad urchin, and did not speak of material affairs. He had no dependence on his brothers, who had all along been helping him. The stage of complete independence from everything is also called the purified stage of fearlessness. So reading text 44, since there's only a couple people here, why don't we just all chant it together? Udichim pravivesha, Udichim pravivesha sham gata purva mahatmabi kriti brahma param jayan navarteta yatogata. Word for word, Udichim, the northern side. We can do it all together. Pravivesha asham. All right, those who wanted to enter there. Gata Purvam, the path accepted by his forefathers. Maha Atmabhi, by the broad-minded. Kriti, within the heart. Brahma, the supreme. Param, Godhead, Jayan, constantly thinking of, Naavarteta, past his days, Yata, wherever, Gita, went. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Prabhupada. He then started towards the north, treading the path accepted by his forefathers and great men, to devote himself completely to the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he lived in that way wherever he went. Report. It is understood from this verse that Maharaj Yudhisthira followed in the footsteps of his forefathers and the great devotees of the Lord. We've discussed many times before that the system of Varnashram Dharma, as it was strictly followed by the inhabitants of the world, specifically by those who inhabited the Aryavarta province of the world, emphasizes the importance of leaving all household connections at a certain stage of life. The training and education was so imparted, and thus a respectable person like Maharaj Yudhisthira had to leave all family connections for self-realization and going back to Godhead. No king or respectable gentleman would continue his family life till the end, because that was considered suicidal and against the interest of perfection of human life. In order to be free from all family encumbrances and devote oneself 100% in the devotional service of the Lord, this system is always recommended for everyone because it is the path of authority. The Lord instructs in the Bhagavad Gita 18:62 that one must become a devotee of the Lord, at least in the last stage of life. A sincere soul of the Lord, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, must abide by this instruction of the Lord for his own interest. The specific words Brahma Param indicate Lord Sri Krishna. This is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita 10:13 by Arjuna, with reference to great authorities like Asita, Devala, Narada, and Vyas, as Maharaj Yudhisthira, while leaving home for the north, constantly remembered Lord Sri Krishna within himself, following the footsteps of his forefathers, as well as the great devotees of all time. Om Gyanatam Nandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksumikamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchapo Patriyudhischa Krikasanya Diyevicha Patidano Pavane Vyo Vaishnavedya Namo Namaha. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, of course, is an eternal associate of Krishna. He has come with Krishna to perform his pastimes in this material universe. And of course, he's always remembering Krishna. He's completely a pure devotee who never forgets Krishna at any time. So technically, there would be no need for him to change his position or externally renounce everything. Just as we saw a great king like Maharaj Ambarish, who was known for doing all the nine processes of devotional service, even while he was a king. You know, completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he worshiped the deity, he did everything. And he still stayed in his position, at least for some time, as emperor. However, Maharaj Yudhisthira, like all the great devotees, are acharyas. And they need to set example for other aspiring devotees, those of us who are not eternal associates of the Lord. So you can imagine an emperor of the world, at least the known world at that time, trying to perfect spiritual life at the very end of his life. If he remains in that position, he's going to be besieged with problems, concerns, distractions, anxieties. You know, his ministers are coming in saying, you know, they're having a drought in such and such province, and, you know, the people over here aren't happy, you know, with their local leader. You know, in other words, all the problems, administrative problems that he'd have to deal with, which isn't necessarily what you want to do at the very end of life. And you're trying to think of Krishna, remember Krishna, and prepare to go back home, back to Godhead. So we can all understand this, I think. We're not in a position like Maharaj Yudhisthira as emperor of the world, but even in our ordinary household life, we know there's always distractions, encumbrances, attachments are there. It's natural. And so we see that we experience this attachment that continues. We are perhaps attached to our spouse, we're attached to our children, then our grandchildren, then our great-grandchildren, and so it goes. I was speaking with a devotee recently who was showing me pictures of his five great-grandchildren. We're kind of at that stage, some of us. And I'm not criticizing. I'll probably be the same way. You know, in other words, that attachment continues on and on. It doesn't just end at a certain point. We continue to become attached to, I guess in a very sort of clinical, crude way, we say to our byproducts. I think that probably uses that word, meaning our ancestors, not our ancestors, but our descendants. So, it is a problem if we do not take to some degree of renunciation in our life. Now, of course, it's a great blessing if our family members are devotees, and if they all have spiritual names, that's always very, very good, because in at least a gajamiya, we might at least remember their name, and that attachment will help us to remember Krishna. But it is necessary to become somewhat detached, to focus on Krishna consciousness, especially at the end of one's life. And of course, as Prabhupada often said, who knows how long we have to live? We don't know when the end of our life is. It could be tomorrow. So in other words, we need to always be Krishna conscious. But particularly, we know that as we reach a certain stage, a certain age of life, we need to become more serious. And so Varnashram is designed by Krishna for a peaceful, orderly society that everything works together well, but the focus is on spiritual advancement. It is not there just as a sociological or, you know, social type of economic, political structure. It is that to some degree, but primarily it's meant for people to make advancement in spiritual life. So there's a natural progression through life towards greater and greater renunciation of the material, and that's why there's the stages of brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, where one becomes more detached, well, not from brahmacharya to grihastha, but after that, then one becomes more detached throughout the different processes of life. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada indicates in two places what the real purpose of sannyas or the purpose of renunciation is. First, he quotes Bhagavad Gita 18:62, which is Osayana Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will obtain transcendental peace and the supreme eternal abode. Now that isn't directly talking about taking sannyas. He's talking about surrendering to Krishna to obtain the ultimate good in life. And then in the purport at the end, Prabhupada says, thus Maharishi Yudhisthira, while leaving home for the north, constantly remembered Lord Sri Krishna within himself, following the footsteps of his forefathers, as well as the great devotees of all time. So we can understand that renunciation is not particularly valuable or recommended just for its own sake. Many people renounce different things for different reasons. People would go on fast for some political reason. In other words, just an austerity by itself does not necessarily bring one to spiritual advancement. But the purposes are, as we saw in these two, in the verse and in the purport, to surrender to Krishna and to always remember Krishna within oneself, within one's heart. So if renunciation is leading us to this, to greater surrender to Krishna and greater remembrance of Krishna, then it's valuable. Otherwise, it's of no value. In fact, renunciation should never be just about changing one's dress. Prabhupada was often critical of different people, particularly Mayavadi sannyasis. It's described that, in fact, that sannyas is one of the five forbidden things in Kali Yuga. It's actually forbidden, according to the Vedic scriptures, to take sannyas. But Prabhupada emphasized that does not strictly apply to Vaishnavas. And he says, one should not accept the sannyas order of the Mayavad school, which has practically no meaning. We find many Mayavadi sannyasis simply loitering in the street, thinking themselves Brahman or Narayan, that was funny, and spending all day and night begging so they can fill their hungry bellies. Mayavadi sannyasis have become so degraded that there is a section of them who eat everything, just like hogs and dogs. It is such a degraded sannyas that is prohibited in this age. So Prabhupada speaks very strongly, and many times. In fact, I've often said that if you really look at all of Prabhupada's speech and writing, I mean, he wasn't that critical of too many things and groups, but he was very critical of Mayavadis and very critical of material scientists. he'd go after them very strongly. He didn't go after other religions or, you know, other things, but especially this idea of cheating. You know, the idea of this is a Kali Yuga symptom. Just like there's the cheating rulers, the cheating presidents and kings, there's the cheating spiritualists, so-called spiritualists, or sannyasis or swamis, who are misleading the people and often, as they say, he says, loitering in the street, thinking themselves Narayan. I thought that was very funny. Anyway, another point is that renunciation cannot be artificial. It does not really work. If it is done through either pressure or through the wrong reasons, or it's very unnatural, it usually has not a good result. Like I was talking to Pralandananda Swami, who's our sannyas minister in ISKCON once, and he told me that 50% of all of our sannyasis have fallen down in our movement. Now, I want to add to that, most of those were earlier ones who were like 24 years old or 27, like that, who really were not ready. In fact, I'm going to read a purport where probably he says that specifically. But now we have a much better system, and we don't have that so much because people, I think, have to be a minimum 40 years old, have to go through a whole process. Even, what, 2-3 years? It takes some time. You know, it's, the candidates are checked carefully, making sure that their spiritual progress is correct. So we don't have that problem so much. Now, is the Prabhupada made a mistake? Prabhupada needed to make sannyasis for the preaching. He said that. He took a risk. Just like he took a risk with all of us. He made us Brahmins. How many Brahmins fell down? But he took the risk because he had to establish Krishna consciousness. And he had to have a preaching corps, a preaching army, that was going to go out and spread Krishna consciousness on his behalf. So, but the fact is that it can be a very precarious position if one is not properly prepared. So one also has to remember that one can serve in any position, and one can maintain oneself and make advancement in whatever situation in life one finds one. So we need to put ourselves in what Prabhupada calls a position of spiritual strength. We have to situate ourselves where we can be strong, where we can be well situated, and we can make advancement. And of course, our best example of that, we have a whole pastime sort of dedicated to that, which is, of course, the story of Gajendra the elephant. Now, Gajendra, of course, as we know, was a powerful elephant, also a devotee in his last lifetime, but still a devotee, but, you know, he was, a human devotee in his last lifetime. We won't go into the whole story of Gajendra. But the point is, he found himself in the water, and a crocodile grabbed him by the legs or whatever. And the crocodile, of course, lives in the water. It's very powerful in the water. That's his home. That's his domain. The elephant is incredibly strong, stronger than probably any other animal on land. So Gajendra, out of his element, and this battle between them went on for hundreds of years, 1,000 years or something, and Gajendra was getting weaker and weaker. And with the elephant, Prabhupada says, actually could go ahead and, you know, eat while he was playing, he could grab a fish or something, whatever alligators or crocodiles eat, you know. And so he got stronger and stronger, and Gajendra got weaker and weaker. So finally, of course, Gajendra, you know, basically surrenders to Krishna, you know, and he offers, and he's somehow in the heart, he's inspired to offer wonderful prayers to Krishna. And of course, Krishna comes and saves him, and I think he does away with that crocodile with his Sudarshan chakra. And so, but the point is about situating oneself in one's most strong spiritual position. Prabhupada writes in the purport to 8230. And this is, of course, about this pastime. From this we may take the lesson that is our fight with Maya. We should not be in a position which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. That was the exact phrase from the verse, from the Bhagavatam verse, was that you had to have strength, enthusiasm, and strong senses. Otherwise, you know. Well, our Krishna conscious movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy in which all living entities are rotting in a false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna conscious movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit,
They must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. Interesting phrase, isn't it? Normal condition of life. In other words, not something, that means not artificial. I think that's what Prabhupada means by this. Not artificial, but normal meaning, you know. And he says, what constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone. And therefore, there are divisions of Varnashram, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. But then Prabhupada continues, and I think this, I'm reading a lot of this because I think this is a very, very important purport. And we can, because we can understand this principle of being correctly situated in our ashram. Prabhupada says, from this we can understand that in this age the sannyas ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyas at the age of 24 years. But even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu be extremely careful because he was taking sannyas at an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyas, but actually it's been experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, namely the Grihastha ashram. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram, but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position, who takes sannyas artificially, is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the Grihastha ashram and fight Maya with great strength. But one should not give up the fighting and go away. And Prabhupada practically acted on exactly that. One of the early sannyasis had fallen down and gotten married. And then he came back to see Srila Prabhupada. And of course, he was extremely embarrassed, in a very humble position. And Prabhupada wasn't angry with him. He says, all right, that is okay. So now he says, the Krishna consciousness is a good grihastha. And he just encouraged him. Not that Prabhupada wanted his sannyasis to, leave the ashram. No, but Prabhupada was like this. He was able to, and even through all these, when I read through all the different quotes and through different things Prabhupada says in his lectures and in his talks, he balances so skillfully both the strict principles, the Vedic principles, the Siddhanta, what Krishna's words that he's completely true to, and at the same time understands the difficulties devotees have in Kali Yuga. It may not always be up to that standard. I don't like to use the word concessions. And people say, Prabhupada made concessions. He didn't exactly make concessions, I don't think. I think what he did was he gave us the standard and then he showed us the way that we could somehow or another come to those standards gradually or in whatever way. In other words, it wasn't that he just, you can't do it. No, there's a certain point, 16 rounds before regular principles. He's not, no concessions there, In other words, there are those lines. This is what must be done. Now, from that point, you do what you can. You do what you can to fight Maya. He says, never go away. Don't give up the fight. Even if it's difficult, even if there's a fall down, no matter what, we keep endeavoring in Krishna consciousness. So we need to act within our spiritual level, within our roles and responsibilities, and find that situation where we're enthused, peaceful, and making progress in our spiritual life, advancing in Krishna consciousness. And often that means we have other responsibilities that at the same time we have to take care of. So Krishna consciousness can be taken up and discharged from any situation of life without impediment. Now, going back to this purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions two or three times that one might go to the Grihastha ashram or accept the Grihastha ashram if one were sexually agitated or whatever. But that must be also carefully understood, because that does not mean that the purpose of Grihastha life is sexual enjoyment. No, that's Grihamedi life. Prabhupada makes a distinction. The Grihamedi means a materialistic householder whose main purpose is try to enjoy as much as he can. The Grihastha can be called the Grihastha ashram. Ashram means shelter, spiritual shelter. In other words, it's a place where one makes spiritual advancement. not for unrestricted sense gratification. And Prabhupada sometimes called our householders Grihastha Sannyasis. And I remember when I joined the movement, and I was kind of unusual because I already had a wife and child. And my trainee and I joined the Chicago Temple in 72, and we had a daughter. And we were actually, the way we lived then was pretty much like the brahmacharis. You know, we lived in the temple, you know, we went out on Sankirtan, we did everything, we there was very little difference. Of course now, all of us householders, we all have our own homes, et cetera, and it's a little different. But yes, we were very much like Grihastha Sannyasis in that sense. And, you know, in some ways, what's the best thing to do? Maybe, maybe not, but most of us never regret those experiences, being able to be totally immersed in Krishna consciousness, being connected to Srila Prabhupada, being able to take initiation from Srila Prabhupada. So it was good. And then, of course, there was at a certain point, one had to perhaps be situated in a different position to better take care of one's family duties. But that doesn't mean that one just indulges in sense gratification, gives up, you know, Krishna conscious sadhana, like that. So, actually, Prabhupada says, this is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 12th chapter in the intro, you know, where Prabhupada writes the description of the chapter. He says, a grihastha is not meant to enjoy sex life without restriction. Indeed, the whole purpose of Vedic life is to become free from sexual indulgence. All the ashrams are recognized for spiritual progress. And although the grihastha ashram gives a kind of license for sex life for a certain time, it does not allow unrestricted sex life. Therefore, in grihastha life, also there's no illicit sex. The grihastha should not accept a woman for sexual enjoyment. So that's very important to remember that both husband and wife need to regard their spouse as first a Vaishnava, first a devotee, perhaps a god brother and god sister. In other words, we also have to, while, you know, there's so many material activities that go on in household life that are not so glorious, you know, like who takes out the garbage and all that sort of thing, but at the same time, we are talking about Vaishnavas. We're all devotees who are trying to engage in Krishna conscious service. And we need to always remember that, respect that, and the more that we are on that platform, everything goes well, really. Gorky Shordas Babaji, noted as a great renunciate, right? I mean, he's like, when in Chaturmasya, he would like eat, I don't know what it was, something very small, like lunch body or something. I mean, you know, it's like, just complete, I mean, he was like renunciation personified. But he had a spiritual vision towards all devotees, you know, and he was never like harsh or, you know. In fact, here's Babaji Maharaj spoke gravely to a newly married man. A Vaishnava wife is extremely rare and difficult to find in this world. If one has the good fortune of having one, he should see it as a benediction from Krishna. The wife worships the husband as her lord and master. Similarly, the husband should worship the wife because she is Krishna Dasi, a servant of Krishna. In this way, the husband can protect his devotional enthusiasm by not considering his wife to be his maidservant, but she is always the maidservant of Krishna. So, very, very good advice from one of our greatest renunciate acharyas in our line, Gorky Shordas Babaji. So, the mood, as Babaji Maharaj was talking about, should be one of mutual respect as Vaishnavas. And we should have that relationship in all of our relationships with the devotees. But we also have to remember it within the family where there's a certain amount of familiarity. We all know the expression familiarity breeds contempt, which is true, maybe not contempt, but a certain seeing things more materially can be there. So we need to all be working together for spiritual advancement, and we should be gradually decreasing material attachment. And that is part of the idea of the Vanaprastha system. And the different ashrams have this purpose as well, that one can become more and more detached as one goes through life. Now, understanding a little bit more about renunciation. Renunciation in Krishna consciousness or in Vaishnavism means something a little different than maybe Mayavadi or others might think of what being renounced is. And Prabhupada explains this really nicely in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 127, which is the verses, by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Report. The principles of knowledge and detachment are two important factors on the path of transcendental realization. The whole spiritual process leads to perfect knowledge of everything material and spiritual. And the results of such perfect knowledge are that one becomes detached from material affection and becomes attached to spiritual activity. Becoming detached from material things does not mean becoming inert altogether, as men with a core fund of knowledge think. Naishkarma means not undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. And this is a pretty famous quote there, saying what Prabhupada says here. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essential. Similarly, detachment from material forms does not mean nullifying the positive form. The bhakti cult is meant for realization of the positive form. When the positive form is realized, the negative forms are automatically eliminated. Therefore, the development of bhakti, the application of positive service to the positive form, one naturally becomes detached from inferior things and becomes attached to superior things. Now, of course, what is the positive form? The spiritual form, the beautiful transcendental form of Krishna, Jamasundara. Radhashamasundara. And positive service, of course, once you become attached to, means devotional service, bhakti yoga. So rather than only renunciation, it is recommended that one positively serves with one's mind, one's body, one's words, with everything, with one's whole life, and offers everything in service to Krishna. And of course, we have the famous Yukta Vairagya verse, you know, which explains as by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Samrita Descended, there's anasaktasya vishayam itartam upayunjata nirbanta krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate. The vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development while remaining detached from them is said to be suitable by bhakti. The object should be persistently related to Krishna. In other words, first, false renunciation is rejected by Rupa Goswami, and then he says, this is what real renunciation is, yukta vairagya, utilizing everything to serve Krishna. And of course we have in the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life. He is the true mystic, and not he who likes no fire and performs no duty. So this is also kind of a, Prabhupada quote this as a rebuke to the idea of some sannyasis who think themselves above doing any service or something, you know, it just means, or someone in the renounced order, I do nothing. No, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna says, the real person in the renounced order is not the one who lights no fire and performs no duty. Now, of course, lights no fire had to do with performing, you know, fire sacrifices and doing brahminical duties like that. So that's a very important point about renunciation, what real renunciation is. So one becomes detached materially by becoming attached to Krishna. And one who is advanced starts to feel that presence of Krishna more and more within the heart. And that enables one to become detached from material relationships. So the more we become attached to Krishna's service, to Krishna's holy name, to hearing about Krishna, this helps us to become less and less attached to the material world, material energy, material relationships, material sense gratification. So artificial detachment, the 1880 of the impersonalist, does not work. But real renunciation comes through the process of bhakti. And that's what this verse says. That through bhakti, causeless knowledge and detachment arise. So devotional service transfers our attachment from material to spiritual. Everything becomes spiritualized in relationship with Krishna. When Krishna comes in contact with anything, it transforms from material energy to spiritual energy. And Prabhupada, of course, gave many examples of that, like, you know, you take a piece of iron, you put it in the fire, and then the iron acts like fire. It's still iron, but it isn't. It also isn't, because it has heat and light and all the properties of fire. So in the same way, even if we have material bodies, if we're performing devotional service purely, then everything becomes spiritualized. Even our bodies become spiritualized. Okay? So through sadhana bhakti, gradual renunciation comes about in a very natural way. But even though it comes about naturally, sometimes we also may need a push, a little impetus. And sometimes Krishna may force a devotee into a situation to renounce and arrange circumstances so they must depend upon him. In fact, Queen Kunti, in her famous prayers to Krishna, she prays to be free from the bondage of family affection. And Srila Prabhupada says in 1841, the purport, the Lord is addressed as the Lord of the universe or the Lord of the universal mind, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Therefore, it is sometimes experienced that the Lord, out of special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of circumstances arranged by his all-powerful energy. By doing so, he causes the devotee to become completely dependent on him and thus clears the path for his going back to Godhead. So sometimes Krishna will arrange things to help us to surrender, to help our detachment, you know, if that's necessary. And even with great devotees, we see examples of that. Like Dhruva Maharaj, he was insulted by his family members, specifically by his stepmother, and his father didn't support him at all. So he goes off to the forest and becomes renounced and sees Lord Vishnu and, you know, becomes advanced. Narada Muni, 5 years old, his mother dies. So what does he do? He goes and does austerities and becomes self-realized. Chitraketu, great king, he's a devotee, very attached to his child, and he finally got, after so much endeavor, he finally got a son. His son dies. What happened? Well, then, as the Parashara Muni and Narada Muni come and visit him and preach to him. And then the son actually comes back to life and he preaches to him. So even though it was like a tragedy in his family, the result is Chitraketu becomes self-enlightened, self-realized. So Krishna may sometimes arrange difficult circumstances, even in family life, that make it a little less attractive. Or he may be creating a situation for one to become more renounced. And sometimes this happens naturally, gradually. Now that doesn't mean that one should try to cut off all relationships. Maharaj Yudhisthira acted deaf and dumb and like a madman. It's described in verse 43. Now we don't need to do that. Trying to become an avaduta like Maharaj Yudhisthira was, or Jatabharata, is really not the path for us in Kali Yuga. but still, that doesn't mean that one can't become renounced in what's a more appropriate way in Kali Yuga. So rather than cutting up all relationships, not speaking, not hearing, deaf and dumb, one should actually embody the principle of sadhu sangha. In other words, we want to have relationships with devotees. Relationships with devotees help our spiritual advancement. In fact, it's one of the five essential principles of sadhana bhakti. One of those is sadhu sangha, the association of devotees. So that association is very critical to help us to advance, to have people around us who are reminding us of Krishna, reminding us of the philosophy, or service, or the holy name, whatever it may be. And we see that the spiritual relationships are there always. They're there in the spiritual world. The pastimes of Krishna and Goloka and Gokula, very close, loving relationships among the devotees, all centered around Krishna, all supporting one another and all non-envious, just wanting to increase their service to Krishna. We see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, they're filled with these loving relationships between devotees. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, and even more so, I think, in Chaitanya Bhagavata, you see this, the devotees, they're like, they meet each other, they're falling down, crying, embracing. I mean, you know, this isn't dry, like, I don't have anything to do with you, I'm only fixed on Krishna. No. The devotees are experiencing great loving relationships which help them to remember Krishna, which help them to surrender to Krishna. And they all are like serving and praising Krishna together. So devotee relationships are generally spiritual as long as the essence is Krishna, when Krishna is in the center. And of course, they are material to the degree that they're influenced by karma, jnana, which usually means material desires, need for enjoyment. In other words, devotee relationships where you're just enjoying together aren't particularly helpful, but devotee relationships that are more spiritually based, are very, very helpful. They help us to increase our love. They help us to increase our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So particularly in the Grihastha ashram, we want to reduce the material aspects and put more and more emphasis on spiritual. So that may mean focusing on deepening our spiritual relationship, even with the family, and often through increasing our hearing and chanting. That's the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. And if we do that in the family, then that spiritualizes the atmosphere and makes family life more and more conducive to Krishna consciousness rather than in the distraction that must be like ripped away in some way. So we hear over and over again from Srila Prabhupada in the scriptures that there's no hindrance to preach or serve in any capacity in any ashram. So I'm just going to end with a quick reading here of the story of Karma Brahma. There was a story from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila 7, 126 to 129, where Lord Chaitanya met a very spiritually advanced Brahmin priest in South India named Kurma, who became overwhelmed with devotion toward Lord Chaitanya and wished to leave his family and join him in his travels and preaching. The Brahmin begged Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "My dear Lord, kindly show me favor and let me go with you. I can no longer tolerate the waves of misery caused by materialistic life." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "Don't speak like that again. Better to remain at home and chant the holy name of Krishna always. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further advised the Brahmin Kurma, "If you follow this instruction, your materialistic life at home will not obstruct your spiritual advancement. Indeed, if you follow these regular principles, we will again meet here, or rather, you will never lose my company." Lord Chaitanya instructed Kurma to stay at home, preach to everyone on the chanting of the holy names, remain firmly situated in household life. He firmly declared that his life at home would not obstruct his spiritual advancement. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
When you said that Maharaj Yudhisthira was acted deaf, dumb, and
like a madman.
Was that Rishabdev or was that Yudhisthira?
Yudhisthira, it's in verse 43.
Oh.
Yes, we did 43 describe that in our Yudhisthira.
Did Rishabdev also do that?
Not Shiva Rishabdev, Jedabara.
Remember? Yeah, I mean Jedabara, yeah.
Jedabara, yeah. Yeah, that was Jedabara was the same way. People thought he was like mentally deficient or something.
When did Yudhisthira do that?
I think just to show the principle of extreme detachment, because he was the emperor of the world.
When did he do that?
What's that?
When did he do that?
Oh, right at the very end. He's off to the Himalayas now. You know, he gets rid of all this royal paraphernalia, puts his hair down, doesn't speak to anybody, doesn't take any help from anyone, and he just heads for the Himalayas. So shortly after that, of course, he gives up his body and goes back to Krishna. Okay, thank you all. All glories to Shri.